You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business. A Russian hacker group boldly targets critical infrastructure. The Change Healthcare ransomware attack is projected to cost over $1 billion. $300 is the going rate for a SIM swap. Putty potentially reveals private keys. Cisco Talos reports a surge in brute force attacks. Avante updates its MDM product. Omni Hotels and Resorts confirm a data breach. Financially motivated hackers target businesses in Latin America with steganography. A prolific cryptojacker faces decades in prison. On our Learning Layers segment, hosts Sam Meisenberg and Joe Kerrigan continue their discussion of Joe's ISC2 CISSP certification journey and the ransomware equivalent of a Saturday night special. It's Wednesday, April 17th, 2024. I'm Dave Bittner, and this is your CyberWire Intel Briefing. Thanks for joining us here today. It is great to have you here with us. For the past decade, Russia's Sandworm, a military cyber unit, has been notorious for its disruptive cyber attacks worldwide. Recently, a related hacker group, the Cyber Army of Russia, or Cyber Army of Russia Reborn, has escalated these digital assaults, targeting critical infrastructure in the U.S., Poland, and France. This group has claimed responsibility for hacking water utilities and a hydroelectric dam, aiming to sabotage through the manipulation of control systems. Their actions, documented in social media videos, have resulted in tangible disruptions, such as an overflowed water tank in Texas. Cybersecurity firm Mandiant links this group to Sandworm, suggesting either a shared identity or a collaboration between the two. Unlike Sandworm's indirect strategies, the Cyber Army of Russia Reborn directly targets foreign networks, marking a bold shift in operational tactics. Their attacks, characterized by a mix of technical knowledge and reckless tampering, have raised concerns over potential catastrophic outcomes. While Sandworm appears to have transitioned towards espionage supporting Russia's military efforts in Ukraine, the Cyber Army of Russia Reborn continues its disruptive operations. This shift hints at a possible evolution in cyber warfare tactics, with implications for global cybersecurity and the risks of unanticipated severe incidents stemming from less restrained cyber activism. Wired's Andy Greenberg has the complete story, and we'll have a link in the show notes. The ransomware attack on Change Healthcare, owned by United Health Group, has reportedly, so far, incurred $872 million in losses. The February incident led to hundreds of systems being taken offline, prompting criticism from the White House and Congress. Despite a first quarter earnings of $7.8 billion, United Health Group faced significant direct costs and revenue losses due to the attack. The company estimates up to $1.15 billion in direct costs and additional losses of between $350 and $450 million for the year. Restoration efforts have brought some services back, with the pharmacy claim platform at 80% functionality. Meanwhile, the ransomware gang behind the attack, Alf V, or Black Cat, has seen internal conflicts and data leaks, with over 4 terabytes of sensitive data, including patient information, being leaked. United Health Group is working with authorities amidst ongoing extortion threats and data leaks, but faces scrutiny over its handling of the situation and the impact on the healthcare industry. Criminals are targeting T-Mobile and Verizon employees with text messages, offering $300 for assistance in conducting SIM swaps. This campaign aims at current and former employees capable of accessing necessary systems. Screenshots reveal offers from different numbers with claims of obtaining contact info from employee directories. While initially thought to be solely targeting T-Mobile workers, Verizon employees have also reported receiving similar texts. T-Mobile confirmed they are investigating these solicitations for illegal activity, but denied any system breach. The surge in SIM swap attacks, where criminals hijack phone numbers to access victims' personal and financial information, prompted the FBI to issue warnings and the Federal Communications Commission to introduce new rules for secure authentication and customer notifications for SIM changes or port-out requests. A vulnerability in PuTTY, the free and open-source terminal emulator, serial console, and network file transfer application, exposes a method for attackers to potentially recover the private key from 60 cryptographic signatures. This flaw arises from a deterministic nonce generation process intended to compensate for inadequate cryptographic randomness in some Windows versions. The issue could allow unauthorized SSH server access or enable attackers to sign commits fraudulently, posing a risk of supply chain attacks. The exploit requires acquiring signatures from server logins or signed Git commits. Users are advised to update their tools and replace potentially compromised keys. Cisco Talos reports a surge in brute force attacks globally targeting VPNs, web application interfaces, and SSH services since March 18th of this year. Originating from Tor exit nodes and various anonymizing services, these attacks aim at various services, including Cisco Secure Firewall VPN, Checkpoint, Fortinet, SonicWall, and others. The indiscriminate attempts use both generic and organization-specific usernames, potentially leading to unauthorized access, account lockouts, or denial of service. The threat, intensifying over time, leverages multiple proxy services, prompting Cisco to update its block list in response to the changing source IPs. Ivanti has updated its Avalanche mobile device management product, addressing 27 vulnerabilities, including two critical bugs with a 9.8 CVSS score that could enable remote code execution by unauthenticated attackers. The critical flaws are heap overflow issues. Although there are no reports of these vulnerabilities being exploited, their severity underscores the importance of the patch, especially given Avalanche's role in managing extensive device deployments in large organizations. The update also rectifies 25 other vulnerabilities, mainly path traversal and out-of-bounds read issues. Omni Hotels and Resorts confirmed a data breach following the Good Friday cyber attack on March 29th, with customer names, email, and mailing addresses, and some loyalty program information compromised. Payment and financial details, along with social security numbers, were not affected. The attack's timing during a busy holiday period is indicative of ransomware gangs targeting hospitality for their capacity to pay significant ransoms due to potential revenue losses. The Dyaxin team, a ransomware group previously focused on healthcare, claimed responsibility and initially demanded a $3.5 million ransom, later reduced to $2 million, though it's unclear if Omni paid. Security researchers from Positive Technologies have identified over 300 attacks by financially motivated hackers targeting businesses in Latin America, employing steganography to embed malicious code in digital images. The group behind these attacks, known as TA-558, has expanded its focus from the hospitality industry in Spanish and Portuguese-speaking countries to various industries in Russia, Romania, and Turkey. TA-558 uses a range of malware tools, including Agent Tesla and Formbook. One documented attack involves exploiting a Microsoft Office vulnerability to execute a PowerShell script hidden in a JPEG image, leading to the installation of Agent Tesla malware. Charles Parks III, a 45-year-old from Nebraska, is set to appear in federal court in Omaha, charged with operating a cryptojacking scheme that cost cloud computing providers millions. Arrested on April 13th, Parks faces wire fraud, money laundering, and unlawful monetary transaction charges. From January through August 2021, he allegedly used cloud services under the guise of his corporate entities to mine over $970,000 in cryptocurrency, costing two major providers $3.5 million in resources. Parks reportedly manipulated account setups and benefits, continuing operations even after suspensions for non-payment and fraud. The proceeds were laundered through exchanges, an NFT marketplace, online payment services, and banks, ultimately funding extravagant purchases. He risks up to 20 years in prison for wire fraud and 10 years for unlawful monetary transactions. Coming up after the break on our Learning Layer segment, Sam Meisenberg and Joe Kerrigan continue their discussion of Joe's CISSP certification journey. Stay with us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. On our Learning Layer segment, host Sam Meisenberg is joined by my Hacking Humans co-host Joe Kerrigan, continuing their discussion of Joe's CISSP certification journey.
Welcome back to another Learning Layer segment. We are continuing our conversation with Joe Kerrigan as he gets ready for his CISSP. So, Joe, you're in it.
I'm I'm in it now, yes.
Now's the time that tries men's souls, as
indeed.
Thomas Paine would
very trying.
Say or write. So catch us up. What are you doing? Where are you at? Where are you at in your studies?
So I'm running behind. There's been, you know, it's we're coming up on a holiday and it's, you know, crazy in my house right now. Just haven't had the time to sit down and commit to this, but you know, that's gonna have to change. Asset security is, you know, I've got the understanding. I'd like to take the test to see how I do, because this is one of the areas in the diagnostic test I didn't do very well in. And okay. I was kind of shocked by that, not doing very well in asset security.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward actually to taking that test to see how I do. Now, at the same time, I don't want to lose the information I've got from domain one.
Nice.
So I'm using the tool with the question pool to every other day or so, I've been taking a test on domain one.
Okay.
Just make a 20 question test and see how well I do. And I'm doing okay in those. I'm coming in around, I'm getting what I would consider to be a passing grade. I'd like to get better grades, you know, better scores. But what I like about this tool is that if I miss a question, I can look at the question, understand why I got the question wrong. There's a little blurb underneath that tells you what the right answer was and why, mm-hmm. which is of paramount importance, but there also are links to the material, so you can go right to the video to see where that was covered in the lessons.
Right, right. So two quick comments about that. First, what Joe is referring to is something called our question bank tool, and basically it helps get really granular on very specific areas that you need to study. So for example, you can create a custom quiz of any length. Sounds like Joe's using it to create 20 question quizzes, but if you only have 5 minutes, you can do a 3 minute, you know, question or a 5 minute quiz. I'm sorry, a 5 question quiz. But the point is, you can also select the domain you want to study in.
Correct.
And the subdomain, and even some subdomains under that. So it gets very granular if you want to do deep dives. And that leads me to my second comment, Joe, which is about your results. It's actually normal to see a little bit of volatility within the QBank, because it is so specific, right?
Okay.
It is so granular.
Good.
So I wouldn't, you know, freak out if one quiz you get a 90 and the next time you get a 70.
Right.
Like, that just helps you pinpoint exactly what you need to study.
Excellent. That's good to know.
So sounds like you have the QBank down and you have a good routine for domain one. Can you talk a little bit more about, like, specifically what you're doing for domain two and what that looks like?
The same process I did for domain one, which is where I've gone through and I've taken the notes, and I have my own, I have a Google Doc file I'm fortunate enough that I have two monitors. So I keep the Google Doc file on one monitor and I keep the video on the other monitor, and I'm watching the video and typing the notes in as I'm watching the videos.
Great.
Keeping notes. When it comes time for the actual class lecture, I am using the printout of the class notes N2K provides as a PDF. I've printed some of those out. This time for domain two, I did something I didn't do for domain one, which was I went and read the book.
Mm.
And I actually spent a lot of time in the book, and I read actually the readings for domain one as well. I kind of skimmed through those as well. That took a little bit of time. So I'm doing a deeper dive on domain two, which is why the time commitment is a little bit greater, I think. But
makes sense. And by the way, I do love what you're doing, because you're basically getting, because from the textbook to the video library that you're going through, and then also like the longer lecture style, it is a lot of repeated information. But
right.
You know, it's not like it's redundant or it's exactly the same, but it's, you're getting the same information in different modalities.
It's reinforcement.
It's reinforcement. That's
right.
Exactly right. And specifically within different modalities, to wonk out for a second, learning science shows that's really good for knowledge retention.
Yeah, good.
So what you're doing, you know, might be natural to you. It makes sense. But, you know, for maybe some people haven't studied in a while or haven't flexed that muscle, that's kind of what you have to do. You have to immerse yourself in the content in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. And that's what I'm trying to do this time. Or well, at least with domain two. Domain one, I wasn't all that concerned because I did fairly well in the diagnostic. So, but I did go back and review some of the major points.
I'm curious, is there anything in like domain two in your studies that just kind of stand out to you being difficult or hard to wrap your head around? Any questions about the content that you might have?
Nothing stands out as like difficult to get my head around. Everything makes sense. It's all very logical.
So, Joe, since you don't have any content questions for me, I have a content question for you. Pop quiz. You ready?
Okay.
What's the difference between a data owner and a data custodian?
A data owner is the person who is actually the person that owns the data. This is usually someone pretty high up in the in the food chain, usually like some higher level management. The data custodian is the one who's responsible for maintaining the appropriate access, the appropriate authentication, and what's the other? CIA. Hold on, just a minute. Give me a second.
So,
okay, here it is. The data custodian is the one who is responsible for maintaining all the CIA stuff around the, you know, that it's only accessible to people who should have access, that the data is correct.
Confidentiality.
That they're the people where the rubber meets the road, actually.
Yes, that's right. That's right. The confidentiality, integrity, and availability, and the authorization and authentication you're talking about, that's what really be wrapped up in the C.
Then the
talking
C.
About the access
correct.
Control.
Yep.
So, all right. Look, I believed you when you said you know your stuff in domain two and you didn't have any questions, but I had to verify. Trust
sure.
or verify, right?
Sure.
That's probably something in domain two of the two.
Yep.
Pretty meta. Well, Joe, good luck with the studies. Seems like you're on the right path. You're doing the good work. And again, you will get to domain three when you get to domain three. But like you said, you just got to make the time and carve out the time.
Yeah, I've got to do that this week.
Awesome. Well, we'll hold you accountable because next time we talk, we'll do a deep dive into domain three.
Excellent.
That's my N2K CyberWire colleague, Sam Meisenberg, and my Hacking Humans co-host, Joe Kerrigan. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI. Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. And finally, a junk gun, often referred to pejoratively as a Saturday night special, is a term used to describe cheaply made, low-caliber handguns that are considered to be of poor quality and reliability. Back in the 70s, they were the go-to weapon of choice for, say, holding up a liquor store, or so I've been told. In the digital arms race of the 21st century, Sophos XOps has uncovered the cyber equivalent of junk guns proliferating across underground forums. Dubbed junk gun ransomware, this trend features rudimentary, low-cost ransomware tools sold mostly on a one-time purchase basis, diverging from the traditional ransomware-as-a-service model. This development democratizes cybercriminal capabilities, offering entry-level attackers the means to execute ransomware campaigns without substantial initial investment or technical skill. Through their investigation, the researchers discovered 19 varieties of such ransomware, indicating a shift towards enabling lower-skilled threat actors to partake in cyber extortion activities. These tools, available across several forums from June 2023 through February of this year, range in sophistication and cost, highlighting an emerging market catering to cybercriminals targeting smaller, less protected entities. The allure of junk gun ransomware lies in its accessibility and potential profitability for individuals targeting small businesses and personal devices. These weapons are cheap, hard to trace, and provide a low barrier of entry for illicit activities, mirroring the advantages once held by physical junk guns. I must admit, I've sometimes pondered the potential of a criminal business model of nuisance ransomware, low-level, low-sophistication, low-cost-to-the-victim activities that provide steady cash flow for the criminal owner-operator, but which also flies under the radar of law enforcement who have much bigger fish to fry. And when I say pondered, I mean purely as a hypothetical, of course, a thought exercise. Stay in school, friends. And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. We'd love to know what you think of this podcast. You can email us at cyberwire@n2k.com. N2K Strategic Workforce Intelligence optimizes the value of your biggest investment, your people. We make you smarter about your team while making your team smarter. Learn more at n2k.com. This episode was produced by Liz Stokes. Our mixer is Trey Hester, with original music by Elliot Peltzman. Our executive producers are Jennifer Iben and Brandon Karp. Our executive editor is Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.